Hello, welcome to Game Week 3 of the United Masterclass. I'm your host, Haider Rabbani, and I'm joined by Rob Blanchard, as always. And today, we have smiles on our faces. It has been a great week, Rob, and I know all the fans are really happy as well. Because Man United have beaten Liverpool 2-1. But more importantly, Rob, for me, the performance was excellent. Ten Hag, for me, it was a tactical masterclass. The players left everything on the pitch. They outfought, outran, outpressured, outdesired. Everything that you want to see. The basics, the non-negotiables, they did. So it was a really fantastic performance and a great way for Ten Hag to get his first victory. We always say don't get too high, don't get too low. But I've enjoyed it and I've enjoyed rubbing the victory in the faces of my Liverpool mates as well. So what are your thoughts? You're going to tell everyone to calm down. But I think you can get a little bit too high because that was a fantastic performance and exactly what we wanted to see.
I think whenever you beat Liverpool, you can always enjoy it. Yeah, guys, go out there, enjoy it. You've beaten Liverpool, our most bitter rivals. If you think everything's fixed at Manchester United, then you're probably a little bit silly, aren't you? So this is the way to look at it, is that we definitely saw something intrinsically positive at Old Trafford against Liverpool, something we've been begging to see for years, pressing, hard work, doing all the things that you kind of have that tick list of things that you want to see, pass the ball 5 yards without giving it away, desire, passion. They did it all, and they did it for 95 minutes. So massively, massively positive, and congratulations to Ten Hag. I'm not congratulating the players yet, Haider, because they've got a year to make up for yet, yeah? So well done, lads, and especially well done to the new players, and we're going to talk about a few of those players today. We'll talk about maybe the existing squad and what Ten Hag needs to do now. But we're also going to do a preview of this for the Southampton game. Why are we doing that? Because Liverpool's gone now. We'll talk about Liverpool because it was great. And like you said, you wound your Liverpool mates up. Great. But the next game's what's important now. Southampton is now more important than Liverpool. Yeah, you've got to go and replicate it against the Southampton team. I'm telling you this, they're going to turn up and say, we're going to outwork you. Because that's what we do at Southampton. Doesn't mean Southampton are better than Man United, but United now have to show that this isn't a flash in the pan. Fantastic to beat Liverpool in that fashion. A Liverpool team that was depleted, so we'll be honest, 9 players out, etc., etc. But more importantly, Manchester United brought it, and it was a deserved victory. 2-1 was the right result.
Yeah, absolutely. And guys, you know the drill. Make sure to hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. Give us a follow on at Man United MC as well. Give myself a follow on at Haider_Rabbani. And Rob a follow on at @_Rob_B. And if you see this on Twitter as well, give it a retweet when there's as many people involved in this conversation as possible. We'll break it all down. So Rob, let's start with the team selection. As we always do every single week, we have the graphic here from Sky Sports. And Ten Hag was really bold with his selection. He dropped Harry Maguire, his captain, to bring in Varane. And he did say before the game that, you know, he wanted, a bit more agility. He wanted a bit more, let's say, speed. He talked about Varane's leadership and communication. We saw that throughout the game. I thought Varane was spectacular in his performance. And he just wanted a mobile front three where he can play, where he can combat Liverpool's, you know, front three and their pace as well. And their recovery in terms of, you know, if they go in behind. Then you looked at the midfield. McTominay came in with Eriksen. Eriksen was deeper. And then you had Alanga, Bruno and Sancho. And then Marcus Rashford was up front. So Ronaldo also was dropped. So these are really, really big decisions. And I really commend Ten Hag for making them. You know, three games into his tenure at Manchester United, to drop Harry Maguire and Cristiano Ronaldo and then to put in the performance that they did and to basically say to them that, you know, okay, you're the GOAT. You're my captain, but this is a game plan. This is why I'm doing this. We need to be aggressive. We need to be compact. We need to be agile. And he did that. Oh, and Luke Shaw also didn't play. And I think that was really, really... I actually take my hat off to Ten Hag. I just think that was really ballsy, to be honest.
I said before the game, and I was really surprised how surprised United fans were with the team. And why do I say that? It's because you just got leathered 4-0 by Brentford. So if this manager stuck with what he had or tweaked what he had, would that not be prime Solskjaer? So I don't look at it as in, I saw the team and I thought this kind of feels natural that you're going to play something that mirrors 4-3-3, allows you to counter-press a lot more effectively, gives you a bit more ball control, gives you a little bit more mobility at centre-back and kind of gives you the left-back drive that you need that maybe Luke Shaw hasn't been giving you. Do you know what I mean? At the moment. So again, Alanga started the game. Man United fans kick off. Why is Alanga playing? Boo hoo hoo. Upset as usual with all of this stuff. Oh, Rashford's playing as the striker. Oh my God, this is terrible. But I kind of looked at it all and I just thought, this all makes tactical sense. If you're going to play a progressive style of football, you just can't do it with Ronaldo. That's the truth. So I think looking at this selection, this four, like it kind of sets up here as a 4-5-1. It's not 4-5-1, obviously. It's a 4-3-3. And we say every week on the Masterclass, over and over again, Man United are really bad at 4-3-3. So the only way to do it, Haydar, is to get the selection right. And I think he did. You said it was ballsy. I just think it made sense. I don't think that if you're sat there doing the metrics, that any of this is massively surprising. It would have been more of a surprise, I think, if he just played Ronaldo, say, at the top of a 4-5-1 and maybe tried to just make it about Cristiano, which, let's be honest, it's what we've seen for the last year. It doesn't work. But I was pleased with the selection, and I think the selection itself spoke for itself as well. Like, I think when you look at the centre-back pairing and you look at everything that everyone did individually, it was all completely spot on.
He got his tactics spot on as well, Rob. United were compact and they were aggressive. Martinez and Malacia, we'll talk about them later on. Their left-hand side was so aggressive. You saw very early on when Salah and Martinez came together and the butcher gives him a little shoulder, you know, in the first or second minute, set the tone. I mean, he is already a fan favorite. But this game suited him and he was fantastic. I think the key here, and there's a comment here from Mimic saying, you know, we dropped the short passes out the back. Ten Hag was just smart, you know. How do you evade Liverpool's press? You can try and play through it, but Man United are very poor at that. Or you just go over the top. And they just went long with De Gea. And De Gea came off his line. Do you remember very early in the game? Maybe I think it was maybe 10 minutes in. He rushed out and he kicked the ball, smashed it into Rose Ed. That set the tone. That David De Gea has his problems. United need to replace him. But that also settles the centre-backs. You know, okay, you know what? De Gea's come off his line. We feel a little bit more comfortable. I think what was also very smart is that when you look at the midfield, we know Eriksen is technically gifted. McTominay struggles in that respect as well. So Ten Hag knew that Man United in the midfield technically weren't as good as Liverpool, although Liverpool's midfield was poor, but that's an area we struggle with. So I'm going to whisper it. We played a bit of Ralph Rangnick football, didn't we? We counter-pressed, won the ball back quickly and exposed them. And then obviously we'll talk about the right half space as well between Trent and Van Dijk. But United played smart football and they deserved the victory.
Yeah, like if you've got weaknesses, the worst thing you can always do is to just lean on those weaknesses. That's what Man United have done for a long time. So David De Gea and the centre-backs, you might say, have struggled over the last 12 months to play out from the back. So you do have to keep practicing it. But Haydar, if it costs you goals and you lose football matches, you can't do it. It's just the bottom line. You have to find a different way. So it would be ridiculous, wouldn't it, to go, I played really well against Liverpool, but they've got a high press, so we just passed the ball around, gave it away, and they scored a goal. That's the worst thing you could do. It's exactly what they did at Brentford. And what you need is footballers, Haydar, that think outside the box, that go, all right, I know the manager wants me to do these things, but what the manager really wants me to do is to be careful. And what the manager really wants me to do is to be progressive. So when you looked at the shape of the team, I think the two key points of the changes, and we will go into some more detail, is that when you took Ronaldo out the team, it allowed you to have a three that worked together on a press. And on the flip side, at the other end of the pitch, not having Harry Maguire there meant that you felt better that you weren't going to get done or for pace behind. So Salah couldn't really work through that. Every time Salah came inside, Martinez was there. Every time Salah went a bit wider, Malacia was there. And that worked perfectly. It's great you win the game. We can look back in hindsight and say great decisions. But I think, again, on a pen and paper, you're drawing that out. They're really obvious things. And I think the manager looked at the Brentford match and also the Brighton game and thought, this is no good. We lost two matches. We will have to tweak these things because to move forward, we have to find a system that fits the players. And then we can develop them with either new signings or new tactics.
Some really good comments here, Rob. So Alan's saying here, Ten Hag did what Rangnick couldn't as interim and Solskjaer wouldn't do because he was too weak. He said, this is my club and I'm dropping you, Harry, Ronaldo and Luke. I think that's a really great point, you know, that if Maguire played this game, Rob, I think United would have lost. And this is not just a slight on Harry Maguire, but I just feel like the way that we set up and what Ten Hag wants to do, he wants to play a high line. I think when you play a high line as well, you need your keeper to be a sweeper keeper and to come off the line. De Gea's not great at that. So you combine that with, I don't think you have to be quick on a straight line as a centre back. You have to be agile. You have to be able to move. And then you also, if you are slow, you have to think quickly as well. I don't think Maguire does that. Now, there have been reports, Maguire, I don't think he'll go to Chelsea, but if he was playing in a back three, it masks his deficiencies. It allows him to pick the ball up, step into midfield, progress the ball forward, and he's fantastic at that. But he's not combative, he's not agile, and he's not quick. And if Ten Hag wants to play a high-line, progressive football, Harry Maguire in a two, for me, it's not going to work on Man United. The biggest problem is Varane is injury prone. We know that. So I got so excited about Varane. Amazing leadership, communication, etc. But ultimately, we don't know whether he's going to be fit, you know, for a prolonged period. And that's the problem.
It is a problem. And injuries for players that get repeated injuries is always a problem. So you need to have a thicker, deeper squad. So I think when you look at Harry Maguire, there's no doubt that he is a ball progressor. We've done shows on him before where the stats prove that. So he can be someone that steps out from the back. But just the big problem always with Harry, and it's never going to go away, is that he is slow. Like, we, you know, we talk about getting done by pace behind. And what's the issue? It's just one word. Slow. He's slow. So this is the problem. Whereas Martinez isn't slow. He might be 4 inches smaller. It doesn't matter because you get done for pace in the Premier League. The days of balls being fired up in the air have gone. They do happen now and then when you play certain teams, and some teams will go longer on you because you're smaller, but it generally doesn't hurt you. The stats show this. So I think that Martinez starting is something that's very natural. A Dutch coach is always going to play with a left-footed centre-back. That's what they want to play on the left-hand side. Every Dutch coach does it. So there is no real way back in for Maguire to start. Like Maguire's, it's either Maguire or Varane. That's the way it goes. And if Varane is on form and Varane is fit, it's not Maguire, is it? So I think that Harry Maguire, like you just said, they're the Chelsea thing. I've heard United fans the last week kind of trying to sell Harry Maguire to the Twitterverse. Oh, he'd be really good in Chelsea's back three. You know, blah, blah. No, he wouldn't because he's slow. He's slow. It's a problem. So he'd be better in a back three than a back four, definitely. I think Chelsea would be shooting themselves in the foot. They've just bought Cucurella, who's a diverse left-sided defender who can play in that three and is quick. And that's what they want. So that's why Cucurella's come to that football club. They're also obviously looking at Fofana. So I think that that's more what Chelsea would want to do. And I think with Harry Maguire, it's going to be a painful year for him, unless there's going to be an injury to Varane, which means he'll become a starter once again. I don't see a way back into it for them. And when I say them, I'm talking about the players that were dropped. Because I think if you want to play 4-3-3 effectively, you've got to forget about who's got the biggest wage. You've got to forget about who's got the biggest ego and who's got the biggest reputation. You've got to play an 11 that win, that win, that win, that win. And that has got to be boring. You've got to keep doing that. Win, 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 win. I looked at the next fixtures, Haydar, and people were like, oh, you know, you could bring back someone in here. No, play the same 11, do the same tactics. Play every team exactly the same and say to them, we are talented and we're better than you. We're going to play 4-3-3. We're going to kill you. That's it. We don't care who you are. And that is, I think, how this manager has to do it now. He has to build with the effective players that he has, and the players who are less effective go and sit on the bench.
100%. Let's now talk about some of the statistics here, Rob. And I think the main ones that we want to have a look at. So we'll look at the XG here. So United 1.67 to Liverpool's 1.39. They only had 30% possession, United did. So something that actually I was wondering before kickoff was, would Ten Hag almost not sacrifice his principles, but would he say, you know what? Liverpool are better footballing side than us at the minute. They are better with the ball at their feet. They're going to press us, you know, aggressively. Do I sort of temper what I do and how I want my team to play? And then do I also set them up so that they can be effective? And I think that's what he done. So that was impressive for me. And something that Curran said, you guys will probably know him if you've watched. We've done a few shows with him on Ranić and on Ten Hag, Curran Tejwani. And he tweeted this, and I thought it was quite interesting. He said that when Ten Hag was at Go Ahead Eagles, Utrecht, and he was at Ajax, they didn't all play the same way. So it shows he's tactically flexible. And he's also not wedded so strongly to his principles in the sense of that, you know what? I'm just going to play my system. Doesn't matter what players I've got. I'm going to make them do it. Because if they can't do it, they can't do it. And right now, this squad makeup, they can't play the sort of brand of football to a high level the way that Ajax had done under Ten Hag.
Yeah, I don't want to be contrary to what you're actually saying because I know what you mean. But this was Ten Hag football. This is what he wants to do. He plays, he's a coach who last year played 4-2-3-1 and he has played different systems at every club he's been at. So you're totally right there with that comment, especially from Go Ahead Eagles to where he is now. But 4-3-3 is what he wants to play. Why? Because 4-3-3 is his philosophy and 4-3-3 is what wins trophies. This is it. It's as easy as that. So I think he's looked at the 4-2-3-1 that he's played in the last two games and gone, rip that up. We're playing 4-2-3-1 to fluff Ronaldo. That's what we're doing. He can't do the other stuff, so we're trying to put three behind him pressing. What you saw was Man United played a 4-3-3 with the same stylistic positional principles. So you saw that when the ball was coming out from the back against Liverpool, that the four forwards, because I include Bruno in that, went and took the spaces over. They went and stood in those spaces and went, bring it. Now, that's what you would do in a 4-2-3-1 anyway. On the 4-3-3, it allowed United to be much more aggressive, being those pushing in those systems the way Liverpool will with a 3-3. And that's something we've never really seen at United. When they tried it under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, it failed so spectacularly, United just used to get cut like a knife through butter. So I actually think it's the opposite, Haydar. I think we saw Erik ten Hag football.
But what about possession? Ten Hag doesn't go into games with 30% possession.
But Erik ten Hag did not go into the game and say, lads, just have 30% possession. He didn't
Didn't. But
yeah, so he didn't compromise his principles there. What he did was he said, I want to win this football match. This is how we're going to win it. We're going to play 4-3-3 and you're all going to do these individual jobs. And at the end of the day, I want to win. I don't care if it's 1-0, 2-0, 2-1, whatever. And I want the 3 points. That's what managers do. Jurgen Klopp played to his principles and lost. So Jurgen Klopp's not going away feeling good about that. And so this is the whole thing. I don't think that Ten Hag goes into games and comes out of them and goes, 50% possession where that was half and half, tick. I don't think he does that. I think he wants to win games. So when you look at these metrics, there is one metric that jumps out. Say it to me, Haydar.
Pressures.
What's the one? Pressures. 200 versus 88.
More than
unheard
double.
Unheard of at Manchester United. Unheard of that we had 200 pressures in one football match in 90 minutes. Like, what? This is a Man United team that sometimes could do 40 or 50 in a game and look knackered. They did 200. So that extra 17K or whatever they ran together after Brentford clearly had an effect because it shows that they can run. And we always say this, why are Man United players not running? Well, I think the truth is they're just lazy, a lot of them. Yeah, they're just not doing it because they don't want to do it. So if we go and see the next game now, Haydar, which will, of course, is the Southampton game, which we will preview at the end of the show. If they don't run against Southampton and say Southampton have 180 pressures and Man United have 65, we can highlight that and say there's something wrong there. So this is what we heard that Ten Hag did with the team after Brentford, is that he wrote all the metrics out and handed them out to individuals and went, tell me why you were so bad. Of course, you never got an answer for that, have you? You just can't say, I didn't run, boss. But that's the truth. So 200 pressures is the metric that jumps off the page here. And then you've got to kind of marry it with the other one. So distance ran, Man United ran more, only just. So it's not a huge thing, but Liverpool are a running team. So they ran 111 kilometres as a total. Man United ran 114 for a team that doesn't run. That's like amazing. But then the next one, of course, is that you got 30% possession versus 70, but you had a higher XG. So that the higher XG is much more important than the possession stats. So I think with Ten Hag, ideally in the future, you know, like a year into the project, of course, he would want more possession. But he's not saying to them, give up possession for it. He's saying, do the other bits first, because they're the bits that are going to win you football matches.
Rob, honestly, to outrun, to outpressure Liverpool 3 games in is ridiculous. They're the best, the best up there with City, the best hardworking sides in Europe. Both of them to do that.
They're probably number one. They are number one by metric. Yeah. They are number one, number one running team in the world.
So to do that is something I do want to actually add as well. So we're seeing reports as well that Ten Hag, you know, he made the players run that extra 13.4K. Apparently Ten Hag did it with the players. That is, I absolutely love that. But you know what? I'll tell you why I love that. Because he's showing that, you know what? I shoulder some of the blame as well. I'm the leader. I'm not above you. I'm going to do it with you. So I think that's huge for leadership to take the ownership and to get down and, you know, to do the punishment, let's say, with the lads is huge. And he will have gained a lot of respect for his players. And it's little things like that, the intangibles, I think, that sometimes gets overlooked. Attitudes that Ten Hag said after the game is really important. Doesn't mean you don't, that tactics aren't. Tactics are so important. And Ten Hag was tactically spot on. But he talked about attitude. And that's why Man United won the game as well. Because Liverpool, they United challenged for all the duels and they won. They fought for all the second balls. And Liverpool just, they were almost shell-shocked. They were scared. And that's something we haven't seen for a very, very long time. They didn't give Liverpool a minute to breathe. And I just think that that is the blueprint now. These are the, I'm going to say, the non-negotiables. These are the bare minimums that this United squad has to do week in, week out. And if they do that, they'll beat teams because there is quality in there. There are good players in that squad.
And if you do these bare minimums, Haider, and you lose, it's all right. Because what else could you have done? If you tried your hardest and you ran the hardest that you can and you played on the ball as well as you can and you did everything you're supposed to do and you lose, yeah, some bloke on Twitter might get upset somewhere across the planet, but your manager is always going to say to you, you did your job today, and that's what matters. We can't say that about this Man United team over the last year. We just truly can't. They've all kind of bypassed their responsibility of whatever their jobs are, earning hundreds of thousands of pounds a week. So these stats here for the Liverpool game are massively encouraging. And this is why I said right at the top of the show, yeah, feel good about these things. But Erik ten Hag will be now saying, like, he would have gone in that dressing room after the game and said, well done, lads, you did your job, you got your victory, and I'm very pleased with you today, but tomorrow is another day. We move on. Yeah, we move on. We've got another team to look at now to study, to try and outwork. What I think happened with Liverpool in this game, Haider, is that Liverpool thought, we've stuffed this lot for the last 4 years. Man United haven't beaten Liverpool for 4 years in the league.
It's actually a really awful record. I didn't realize how we've won once.
Yeah, it's an awful record because they are so much better than Man United. That's the truth. So I think Liverpool turned up and had that in their heads a little bit. Kind of see it with someone like Van Dijk, who I think looks way off the pace for him.
Is he in decline, Rob? That's actually something I want to ask you. So I've been thinking about this. He's made mistakes now in three games. He looks a half yard off the pace. He's had a bad injury, ACL injury. Is he actually starting to decline now? Because this is quite an old Liverpool squad. Like, you know, you have cycles. Klopp came in, what, 5-6 years? A lot of these guys have been there. They've got rid of Mane now. You know, Alisson's goalkeepers can play for a while, but you've got, for example, Salah, who's hitting 30. Firmino's the same. Mane's gone. He was very, very central. Fabinho's picking up muscle injuries. Van Dijk is looking, he's hitting 30. He's looking leggy. They've got a bit of a big rebuild. And if they don't get it right after Klopp, they could be in for another 4 or 5 years of difficulty.
I wouldn't use the word decline yet. I think they're well out of form and they've got 9 players injured. So I think these things do affect teams. Like, and again, the psychology of a team is that if you don't feel whole in training, so if you're used to having these players around you and you're used to giving the ball to Thiago in training and Thiago's a magician and he moves the ball around and you say, yeah, I feel great about it. If you haven't got Thiago at Old Trafford when you're looking for an out ball, you might have a problem. So I think that when you look at someone like Van Dijk, he is out of form at the moment, but players do go out of form, sort themselves out and come back. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think for him, like you just said there about the age of the squad and one thing or another, Liverpool will need to kind of rectify these things, but it's not a rush. Like, there's no way they're going to look at what's going on in there and say, all right, we're in trouble. I don't think they're in trouble because they've drawn 2 games and lost 1 in the first 3.
They still get top 4, Rob, for me. They're still going to come.
Yeah, but do you know what? The difference maybe for them, the difference for them and us maybe, Haider, is that if we got top 4, we'd be delighted. Yeah? Liverpool, where we were 10, 15 years ago, top 4 is not what they're interested in. They want to win the title. So, you know, there is a lot of valid talk that if you lose your first 3 games, you don't win one of them, that could do you at the end of the season. It's very true. You know, Man City have obviously started like Man City do. But we've seen City do it 2 or 3 years ago. They had a period, I think, with the top, I think there were 6 games and they were 13.
About 10 games in, Rob. They were so low down.
Yeah.
And just,
I remember,
then they won like 29 in a row or something ridiculous.
I did a Premier League preview on them that year. And after 6 games, people said, who do you think is going to win title? And I said, City. And they were like, but City are 13th and the season's over for them. I was like, it's a ridiculous thing to say after 6 games that the season's over for anyone. It's just stupid. And City went on that run of winning 29 straight and they won the title. Oh, what a surprise. But that's what football's like. So I would look at Liverpool. I don't think they need to be too introspective. And I don't think we need to look at them and say, are we catching them? No. They live in a different planet to us. The colour of the sky in their world is not the colour of the sky in ours. we need to now look within. And as I said, game to game to game to game, you need to look at someone like Southampton and say, well, we did it against Liverpool. Can you do it against a team that might outwork us? And we're now the favourite to win against Southampton. Can I deal with that with my ideology and my psychology as a footballer? Because I think that's where United players fall down. Carrying the club, being Man United footballers, seem to be a problem for them in the last 12 to 24 months. And now they've got to show that they've got the kahunas to be able to do that in situations where other people might doubt them.
It's a massive game, the Southampton game, because if United go and put in a poor performance again, and it means nothing then. Yeah, and the thing is, ultimately, at the end of the day, that is one of my fears. We'll talk about it later on. About Saints. One of my fears going into this game is that this is Liverpool. We had the protests, everything. Look, if you can't get out for the Liverpool game, you can't get out for anything. So, you know, this is the biggest game of the season for both teams. The biggest rivalry. So that, for me, that always, form goes out the window. And I know I predicted United to lose 2-3-0. And obviously, I haven't brought that up yet, to be honest with you.
It doesn't matter to me. United, we won. I don't care about all that stuff. I don't like predictions. I'm not interested in that.
but the thing is that United could go to Southampton. I don't want to say this. I don't want to be negative and go and absolutely mess it up and go and lose and have a poor performance.
Because Southampton very much lose that game. Very much lose that game. Southampton are the hardest working team in the Premier League without fail. They outrun everyone. That's what they're based on. Hasenhüttl football is about running, controlling those areas, not allowing anything in the half space, which is exactly the opposite of what Liverpool did against us.
Absolutely. Now, we've got a graphic on the screen, guys. So on the left-hand side, under each team, United, Liverpool, that is the average. Sorry, the United side is the average, and then Liverpool on the right-hand side is the average for the season on some key metrics. And then during the match, we have, sort of comparing the match average and then the average for the season. So, Rob, when you have a look at this with Man United, what really stands out to me is passes into final third. So let's talk about that, because United had more passes into final third, and we'll talk about Marcus Rashford a little bit later on. So I don't want to cut into how Ten Hag used Rashford. But that was interesting. United had more than in any other game. But also the passes that we've spoken about. On average, they've had 584. They've had more. This game only 297. When you compare that to Liverpool and you look at the passes, pretty much the same. So Liverpool didn't really do anything different. But look at the passes into final third. It's decreased by at least, about 20 passes or so. So let's talk about that, because United were just direct as well, weren't they? They won the ball back high, and then they just exploited the half space between Trent and the space in behind.
Yeah, look, Liverpool still here, in terms of just looking at raw data, still dominated the ball with passing it. And if you're the team that's used to doing that, that's part of your identity. And we know that Liverpool will do that. They'll pass the ball about from the back forward to the midfield and backwards and forwards until they're blue in the face, and getting those balls into the final third. If you look at it, actually, we're saying there, United had less balls into the final third. But it doesn't matter. Why does it not matter? Because it's about what you do in the final third when you're there. How have you created that? Now, that's the difference between it, because ultimately, Man United had 4 shots on target and Liverpool had 5. But Liverpool's 5 shots came from 671 passes. Man United's came from 297. That means United were much more efficient. So this is the story of the game in terms of data. But it's actually not the biggest thing. Like, we do a show about tactics, yeah? And we do a show that's about data and about the balance between all of these things. This shows that you can have the ball and pass the air out of it all day long. But unless you're getting more shots on target and getting the ball in the danger areas more, it means nothing. So Man City, they pass the ball, don't they, for fun? But what do? They'll have 30 shots on target because they're mad. And they've gone and bought Haaland. And it's like, you don't even have to pass the ball, Haaland. We'll just get the ball to you and you have a shot score. Now and then. So they'll work around that, you see. So this is the whole point. There's a balancing point between, winning a football match 2-1, as Man United did, and then losing a football match 671 passes to 297. No one ever talks about that. It doesn't mean anything. But what it does mean is that the manager can go away and say, do you know what, lads? You could have kept the ball better. I think United, in the shape of the game, had periods where, obviously, it's all about energy levels, where they kept the ball better. And you actually saw there were individuals that giving the ball away. Now, ironically, the person giving the ball away the most in Man United's midfield, on the night was Christian Eriksen. That's because Christian Eriksen's up being asked to do a lot more running going into number six.
But Rob, actually, he looked gassed near the end. I'll admit that.
He's not had a preseason, is he, really? Yeah,
but he's really surprised me with his work rate. He has played for a Pochettino side. So maybe I'm thinking about, obviously, he had the heart attack and all that sort of thing. So I'm like, what's his capacity like to move across the pitch? He works his socks off. He's very underrated in that respect to his game. And then you saw it with the goal as well. The first goal with the 1-2 to Elanga. He's fantastic. I'm in two minds. Do I like him deeper? Should he play further forward where Bruno plays? I don't know. I haven't really figured that out yet. But I actually like what he does deep. And he gives United something. He gets on the ball. The amount of times he got picked up the ball and was spraying passes to Rashford making runs, Sancho, Elanga. Like, I know how good he is on the ball. I know his quality, especially on set pieces. But he works his socks off. And that's what's really impressed me. Every single new signing that played, whether it was Malacia, whether it was Lissandro, or whether it was Eriksen, they set the tone in terms of their work rate. So that was impressive for me.
Yeah, Eriksen, we'll just touch on him a little bit. He's not a luxury player. He never has been. He's always worked in systems where he's had to do a certain role. It's just that he's a little bit of a ghostly figure. And what I mean by that is that he won't stick to one part of the pitch, say, well, this is all I have to do. If I've got to cover players, I've got to do it within my own remit of how I play the game. So I've got to go and find the space for people to give me the ball, so then I've got the space. That's kind of like normal things to do, isn't it? But some footballers don't do it like that. I don't like him deep. Why do I not like him deep? Because Christian Eriksen, his high-functioning brain is all about the final third. How can I cut someone open in a pass that you at television land cannot see? But I can see it because I'm on the football pitch. Now, that is what we've bought Eriksen for. Eriksen's there to do that for Bruno, so Bruno doesn't have to. Bruno can go play a false position or drop deeper. But this is why Man United are still looking at midfielders, because it's about the combination. So we obviously know that Casemiro has been brought to the football club. The total deal now is coming up to 160 million for him, which is a crazy amount of money for a 30-year-old, but we'll take it because we need him. And then you've got to kind of build other midfield.
Well, listen, Rob, Frankie will be coming in, so we'll have a brand new midfield.
I know you're very confident about that, Haydar, and that's your vibe. I'm not 100% sure, but I do think that if this deal can be done, Man United will do it. Absolutely, because they cannot not do it. They still need him. But the numbers are going to start stacking up, Haydar, in terms of transfer fees. Like, if you're going to get Gakpo and that's done, and Anthony's pretty much done unless you get the fee done, that those two are going to cost you well over 100 million. It might mean
you've got to start shifting players out then, Rob. You've got to get Ronaldo off the books.
You have to, but it's not Football Manager. So this is the problem. So yeah, you're right. Get Ronaldo out of the club. That should have been done weeks ago. When he first kicked off and went, boo-hoo-hoo, let me out, you should have gone, go. Go to whoever you want to go to. We'll release you off your contract. And you think about it. Ronaldo's been paid for that 7, 8, 9 week period. Yeah. £500,000 pretty much. 360 grand it is in real terms. And he hasn't kicked a ball in that time. So stupid. Get rid of him and go and get yourself a striker that helps you. But that's another question, isn't it? So I think that if they don't get De Jong, they will still probably bring in another midfielder, even maybe one we've not talked about yet. But there's stuff going on, so we can talk about that in the week ahead. But I just think United, that's where the balance will be. Like, Christian Eriksen's not been brought in to be a multifunctional number eight or a deep line number six. Just hasn't. That's not what he does. So he can do those things for you temporarily. He's had to do them in the Liverpool game and the Brentford game. But in the Liverpool game, when you looked at his individual stats and his passing stats, they weren't Christian Eriksen stats. They weren't very good. And that was because Scott McTominay took a lot of the pressure off him by getting the ball and moving the ball. And that's something that you would never have said with McFred. We always obviously criticise Scott McTominay for those things. But Scotty was doing the eight function. Scotty was getting the ball and going with it because he can do it. It's just that he's not always consistent. And Eriksen was the one losing the ball. So I think when you look at those things, I don't really think Christian Eriksen and Casemiro is a perfect pitch. I think you'd encounter more problems in the weeks ahead, and we'll be going, good player, but I want him at the top end of the pitch. A bit like Bruno, you know, like Bruno can play six. But who wants to see Bruno Fernandes as a six? Certainly not me. So I want to see him playing as a 10. And I think those two can push up the pitch and play the balls for the likes of Rashford, Martial and Sancho, getting them in.
Well, Tommy had a great game. I've criticised him time and time again. I don't think he's good enough to start for Man United. I wouldn't lose any sleep if he got sold as well. There are teams that want him. But Rob, he had a fantastic game. And Erik ten Hag did say the same thing. And you've got to give credit. It's not about agendas. You know, I have my reservations about Maguire. If Maguire puts in the top performance, I'll say it. And that's how it should be. We shouldn't be, you know, well, any player. Ronaldo goes and, you know, has a good game. Even though you want Ronaldo out, I want him out now. I think, you know, we're building something interesting here. But I do think that, you know, it is important that we give the players their flowers when they do well.
Yeah, totally.
So, Rob, over here, we've got a couple more statistics and then we'll move on to some players who really stood out for us. Again, you know, you can see that United didn't have much possession. Mm. But I want to sort of pick out, you know, the fouls, for example. Something I said to you off air and you disputed, but I thought United's game management was really, really effective in that final, especially in injury time. They made a couple of interesting tactical fouls. They used their brain. There's a little bit of, you know, doggedness. I'm not going to swear on this, but there's a word that you talk about where you say something housery. I'm not going to swear because YouTube will shut us down. But, you know, United were street smart. And then I think a lot of that came from the likes of Martinez, I think Malacia as well. But I felt that United made tactical fouls. Maybe the statistics don't show that. There were several times I thought Donny van de Beek did it and other players did it, you know, where they stopped Liverpool's flow in the last 10, 15 minutes. And I thought that was very good for Man United. And although I was extremely nervous going into the 5 minutes of added time, those 5 minutes went pretty quickly and United managed it really, really well.
Yeah, look, when Liverpool scored and made it 2-1, United's in-game management was elite, you know, and that's something we haven't been able to say for a long time. Man United generally, in that scenario, 10 minutes ago, 5 minutes ago, injury time, in the last 12 months, they've been pathetic. So, I mean, and game after game, they've proved it. You're right, there were some tactical fouls. There was one specific tactical foul right at the end of the game or towards the end with Donny van de Beek. Pulled down, might have been Van Dijk or someone or Trent in that position on the halfway line. Now, that would be a bad foul against Brentford because Brentford will launch it into your box and take, you know, and try De Gea out in that situation. But that's not what happened with Liverpool. Liverpool was trying to functionally move the ball on. I think the most important stat here, and this will be something, again, the manager will be highlighting and showing his players, pass accuracy. Liverpool, 83%. Which is about average for a Premier League team. Somewhere between 85 and 90 is kind of where you want to hit it. You know, 9 out of 10 passes, as I call it. Man United pass accuracy, 66%. 6 out of 10 balls, 7 out of 10 most. Not good. So that's where the manager will be saying, do you know what? You won the game. You did all these things really well. However, when you've got the ball, don't give it away. And again, it wasn't Scott McTominay giving away. In that situation there, it was actually Christian Eriksen. So that's the kind of thing, is that even though Eriksen is the person who's without doubt the best passer of the ball in the whole
Was he trying McTominay. More? So context, Rob, was he trying? Because I felt like Eriksen was playing those long balls. He was putting his head up and he was trying to pick out those runners. Whereas McTominay...
No, that's not where the accuracy comes out. It was his short game. His short game was poor on the night. So his short game was, he gets the ball, Haydar, and United are trying to exploit the half space. But United were not going long from the 6 to the 10. They weren't doing that. They were still playing through the lines. So what you're trying to do is to get the ball maybe to Bruno, and Bruno then getting the ball into, say, Martial and Rashford. So what you saw for the second United goal, which we will analyze later on, is the ball went to, they got the ball to Martial, didn't they? Martial cleverly has a little dribble, takes two players out with his dribble and slides the ball through the center for Rashford to run through. Rashford was really cool and calm. One touch, didn't even really look up, just saw where the space was, put it to Alisson's side. That's a goal. You want Eriksen, when he's playing the six, to not be playing the killer ball, because you're going to give it away most of the time. You want him to be giving it to the players in front of him. But Eriksen's life has been about playing killer balls, isn't it? That's what he does. That's his job. So that's why I want to see him a little bit further up the pitch, because Man United will be exploiting a ton of teams with the pace that United have if you've got someone like Eriksen on the ball. The issue was Eriksen giving it short. So it's the Eriksen to Bruno pass, which, let's be honest, Bruno's normally the Eriksen player, isn't he? And then Bruno gives the ball away because he's giving it to Fred or something like that, or Rashford, someone dropping in. And they're the problems for United. So that has to be learned, doesn't it? But this is why I'm not really too keen on seeing Eriksen being some kind of deep line midfielder long term.
No, I agree with that. Guys, so many of you in the chat today, make sure you hit the like button, hit that subscribe button. And you see this on Twitter, just give it a retweet, guys. We're going to get as many people involved in the United Masterclass community. Rob, let's talk about some fantastic performances. Let's start with Lisandro Martinez, the butcher of Manchester. I absolutely adore him. I think he's fantastic. He's proactive. He's aggressive. He plays on the front foot. I don't care what Carragher says, Rob. This nonsense. Oh, because I'm 5'9". I feel every time I see Martinez's.
Stop being so offended by that. You're not a footballer. Like, you keep saying it.
5'9" is not short. but no, what Carragher was saying, like, I understand the premise of what he was saying, but in two games into the career. And the other thing to add as well is that Martinez doesn't lose aerial duels.
No.
His the statistics back it up, and that's something Ten Hag said as well. The issue is that when what United were losing in their first two games is they weren't winning the second balls. So that was a problem. So Martinez, his height's not a problem. This game did suit him. But what you can see on the graphic on the screen here from StatsBomb, we're going to focus on that left-hand side because that's where Malacia and Martinez are playing. So we'll talk about Martinez right now. He really, really, Rob, he really showed his quality. He's fantastic on the ball. He's able to recover. He reads the game well. He's able to step into midfield. He's got a great passing range. He's made a couple of lovely passes because he's left-footed playing on the left side as well. He's got good passing angles, and he played a couple of lovely passes to Alanga down the wing. And I just feel like he is now Man United's starting centre-back. It's going to be Martinez plus another. United have lacked players in the squad who have leadership qualities, who are aggressive, who are up for the fight. He has that in abundance. He is such an important signing for Man United. Forget about the quality he brings, just the mentality. And we said when we did a Martinez special of 10 days of Ten Hag. Don't worry, guys. We're still going to finish that. We've got 5 more days, I believe. And we will do that in due course. But we said that I wouldn't be surprised if this time next year, Martinez is captain of Manchester United. Fantastic performance. He's an absolute lion on the pitch. And I'm so excited to see what he can do in the near future.
Well, I'm going to say this again. I'm going to keep repeating until I'm blue in the face. Being a leader doesn't mean you have the armband, first of all. We don't need one person with an armband. We need 11 players with an armband. They've all got to be captains. They've all got to be leaders. So we talked a lot about Martinez and about his what people will see from him. And in the first game that he plays properly, there's that stupid thing with Ben Mee's 4 foot off the ground, heads it in, and you lose 4-0 to Brentford. Martinez gets pulled at half time. It wasn't really his fault, any of that. I think the thing is with Martinez, and you saw it in this Liverpool game, and you see it with this here with the defensive actions, is that you have bought Martinez to go and get at people. That's why you've bought him. You've not bought him to be Harry Maguire's replacement. You haven't, because Harry Maguire has been rubbish for the last year. You've bought someone to come in and to look after that channel and that space and to work with a left back. Now, Martinez and Shaw, Martinez and Malacia, these things will kind of become much more clearer in weeks ahead because they'll get tested, players will take their opportunities, and it'll be silly after 3 games for us to say, it is definitely going to be this. We don't know. We really don't. It's up to these players to prove themselves, both in training, both in matches. But I think the real core here with Martinez is that you needed someone, doesn't matter if they're 5'9", you needed someone to bring it, to be a dog of war. And that's what I described him as, because that's what he is. He wants to go and fight people. And you need that in your back four. Man United, for years, have been too passive in the back four. Always pointing to you, mate, it's your turn to do it. Why are you not doing it? Why did you not go out to him? And they're just static as a result, aren't they? So I was really pleased for Martinez, but it's exactly what I said at the end of when we did the last masterclass, is that no one should be judging him on that Brentford game at all, because that Brentford game is an anomaly if you take out the pieces that were really wrong. The pieces that were really wrong were Maguire, Shaw, and Ronaldo. I'm sorry, people. It's the truth. So they're the 3 players in the core that hurt you because they're not doing the function. Lisandro Martinez will do that function. And I think the whole thing is that him and Varane, it's just in terms of chemistry,
they
work
so well together.
Because they're intelligent footballers and they're quick. So they can cover spaces.
Well. Yeah.
It's kind of so basic, but these basic things feels like we've gone so long at Man United without doing the basics, like passing the ball 5 yards. So we see it and we kind of go, oh, that's new. It's not new. Every other team in the world's doing it. It's just Man United don't do it. So I think Martinez and Varane are your starters. It's just the way it's going to go. Yeah, if Varane gets injured, you've got to bring back Maguire, haven't you? It's just the way it goes. Or you might bring in Lindelof. Eric Bailly's gone now, so I think that's obvious. So that's taking one of those centre-backs out. Phil Jones will probably be gone before the end of the window as well, potentially. So you're honing it down into a box of four players and saying, right, I'm going to find my best combination out of you four, and you're all going to have to fight it out. I think someone like Martinez goes, yeah, I'm up for that. Don't know Maguire will, but I certainly know that Martinez will be like, yeah, I don't care about that. I'll just play and do my job every week.
Absolutely. And Robert, let's talk about Malacia as well. What a great debut. I say debut at Old Trafford. What a great debut at Old Trafford. And I think the biggest thing for me, and you can see this from the graphics. So let's actually compare him to Dalot, and I'll let you go into that. But the biggest thing for me is Malacia, he trusts his pace, but he's also aggressive. The amount of times he stepped up and stopped Salah, you know, he absolutely stopped it before they could turn. And then he was exposed, you know, maybe in terms of pace, but he wouldn't have been. You look at Luke Shaw, he's someone who wouldn't have been as aggressive and stepped on the front foot. That's what Malacia did really, really well. So you've gone from Maguire and Shaw, in my opinion, sorry to say, Rob, lack aggression, lack intensity. They have different qualities. Ball progression is both of their strong points. But when you look at the change with Malacia Martinez, aggression, intensity, you know, fronting up, stepping up and stopping the ball, you know, when the midfielder gets it at source, rather than allow them to turn and then to attack you down the channel and down the wing. These are little things, Rob, but that completely changes Man United's game. You win the ball back higher up, and then you get a Liverpool, you attack them and you counter them. So I was really impressed with him. I think as it stands right now, for me, he's ahead of Luke Shaw. That's not to say Luke Shaw doesn't have qualities, but for what Ten Hag wants from his system, that left-hand side of Martinez and Malacia fits much better than Maguire and Shaw.
100%. Like, we've seen enough of Maguire and Shaw, so we don't want to see that partnership again. We might have to eventually, whether injuries kind of rob us of that and push us in a different direction. But for me, I think Malacia, when you look at what he was up against, and I said this obviously in the promised land as well, he was up against the best player in the world. You know, Mohamed Salah at his best is the best player in the world. So he was playing that person. And I'm not going to say he put him in his pocket or anything like that. I'm not going to be disrespectful. But Liverpool, basically, a lot of their longer game comes from that right. It comes from Trent. It comes from Salah. They're trying to exploit the half space on that side. And we're talking a lot about half spaces tonight. Whereas on the left-hand side for Liverpool, Robertson will touch that, will hug the touchline a bit more like a winger, go on the outside. So that's how they do their shape. And you can see Man United's defensive actions here. Really, really dominant in the box. So that's one of the things when I saw this, like, so good. Look at the six-yard box, right? Just look at the six-yard box. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 defensive actions in the six-yard box. So getting in the dirty areas, like, this is the bits that Man United players don't like getting in. Because, like, oh, if I'm in the six-yard box, I'm responsible. Yes, yeah, so you are. Do you know what I mean? Get on with your job. But you're looking at the penalty box. United dominated that area. And then you look at the left where Malacia was with Salah. That's why Salah was relatively quiet. He got his goal from a ricochet, but in open play, it wasn't his best game. And United managed the defensive shape. And they did manage it, Haydar, to the 95th minute. As we just said there, the last 10 minutes of the game were not massively problematic for United. There was no rushing. There was no over-the-top kind of plays. They weren't going too long. They were keeping possession when they had to keep possession. Overall, a really, really good defensive performance, but also allowing you to breathe, to do all the good stuff. So yeah, Malacia and Martinez, I feel, are now your de facto starting left side at the centre-back and the left-back positions. I want to see that developed. I think Luke Shaw will get back in and out. I don't think Luke Shaw's not got a future at Man United, but I think you're going to have to see that Luke Shaw shows that he can do different things, which we know he can do, but at the moment he's not doing them. So you have to go and sit on the bench. You're earning a big wage, mate. Come back to training tomorrow and prove that you're ready to start once again.
I have no doubt, Rob, that Luke Shaw is more progressive in terms of his carries, and I think he's a better passer than Malacia right now. Malacia's got a very high ceiling, but it's about what he does off the ball. Luke Shaw isn't aggressive. He's not proactive, and that leaves United in trouble when you've got, let's say, the right-hand side of the opposition attacking them. So I think that's what Malacia did really well, stopped it at the source. But let's talk about the man, Marcus Rashford. Fantastic performance. I was really happy for him. He scored a fantastic goal. Trademark finish, you know, in that bottom left-hand corner. He worked extremely hard. He exposed the space in behind, and he really thrives in this role. And we'll talk about this a little bit more. You can see here on the screen, you know, most shots. He had five most shots inside the box as well. So he most of his shots were inside the box. And sprints as well, 23 sprints. We've criticized Marcus Rashford a lot on this show, and a lot of fans have, you know, in terms of his application, his efforts, not tracking back. He was fantastic. And I think this is how you use Marcus Rashford. I do think, Rob, you look at, let's say, if Antony comes in or Gakpo comes in, that when we play sides that will sit a lot deeper in the low block and we have to break them down, I don't think that plays to Rashford's strengths. I don't think he's the player that's going to help pick the lock. But when you play teams where you have to expose the space in behind, I think that's where he'll thrive the most. And I was so happy to see him have a great performance. And you saw the confidence just rise. He scored that goal and he nearly scored again. You know, we went past three players. Fantastic. I love Marcus Rashford when he's in full form. I did have my doubts. Are we ever going to see that again from him? One game. So we've got to be a little bit, you know, sort of cautious. Can he do this with a bit of consistency and longevity? But a fantastic performance, and he was absolutely top class.
I think we saw a great performance from Marcus Rashford for one core reason, and that is that Man United got the central position right. They got it right. So what do I mean by that? So they started the game with Antony Elanga, didn't they? And Antony Elanga kind of, again, playing wide, going in the half space, running at Trent. And the idea is there is, can you get Trent off his rhythm? So Trent wants to, what does Trent want to do? Get the ball on the other side of the halfway line and go forward. That's Trent's game. That's, you know, Trent doesn't want to really do the defensive bit. But as soon as you split that back four up with Liverpool and you've pulled them apart, you're in the game. So what changed? Second half, Anthony Martial changed, didn't he? He came on. So it meant that Martial was getting the ball 2 feet in the middle of the pitch and Liverpool were reacting. So like Liverpool, not normally a reacting team. They will let players, you know, they'll let opposition do certain things, but they won't react because they generally got pace to cover. But we've brought the slide up here, which was the VAR slide for Rashford's goal. And obviously it was very close, but close is good enough, isn't it? It's fine. As long as you're onside, doesn't matter. What you can see here is that this might look like Liverpool players closing down the space for Martial. It's actually 3 versus 3. So you can forget the left side. So the left side over there, Liverpool, doesn't count. He's miles away from the play. So it's 3 Liverpool players. In the middle of the 3 Liverpool players is Martial. On the outside is Rashford. And on the back side is Bruno. So United took this channel and dominated it. And that's why they won this football match. And that's why Marcus Rashford played well. This goal does not happen with you-know-who up top. So with your number 7 up top, with Ronaldo in the game, Ronaldo does not do what Martial does here. He will not.
How good was that, Rob, by the way? Incredible.
It was amazing, but it's also stuff we know. Like I did a tweet today for advertising the show, kind of talking about the bits that happened and the bits. And at the top, I put a caveat. I said, this happened, but this is all stuff we know. This is not new. Like Marcus Rashford doing this is not new. The trick is, how do you unlock Rashford to do this every week? Rashford can't do this in a 4-2-3-1 with Ronaldo up top. So I think for Marcus, the first thing is, I feel happier without Ronaldo there. Now
you have to start Martial, Rob, with Rashford.
You have to start Martial. Or, Haydar, you've got a few days of the transfer window to go. Go and buy a striker. So you've got that opportunity to go and do that. Go and buy someone like Tony, who would absolutely work in this system. So you play 4-2-3-1 with Tony or someone similar. Yeah, I'm not saying you've got to buy Tony, but you've got that. The other thing you can do is to continue playing a false nine. So you could play there, Bruno, in that position to get the ball to feet, to dribble it, and or Eriksen to do that. You've got options. But it's about making the right options for Rashford. And this is why the manager said at the end of the game, and he was really, really kind of buoyant about it. He was like, I'm so pleased that the two players that made the goals for us, he meant scored, were Rashford and Sancho, because they are the two key areas of the pitch in football, in the modern game, where you exploit defences in those two zones in the half space. So Rashford did it perfectly. And the good thing is here, Haydar, is that he finished, because, you know, his weakness, of course, is getting in these areas and then maybe the confidence just oozes out of him in that second and he'll shoot over the bar. He had that bit where he ran through, didn't he, as well? And he's going for the top corner and it looked nice, but he missed. So Rashford now needs to hit the target more and kind of behave like a striker but coming from the left. And this is where he's at his most dangerous, and no doubt about it. But if you play 4-3-3 every week, and that's what you stick with now, and that's going to be your philosophy going forward, Marcus Rashford will be the starter probably on that left-hand side. And if he's not the starter, you might be able to play someone like Gakpo there.
Yeah, I just don't see Marcus Rashford as a tricky winger. You look at Antony. What are Antony's qualities? Why does Ten Hag want Antony? If United had Antony playing against Liverpool, United would have won by more, Rob. Like Alanga worked hard. He did well, but you can see the severe lack of quality in terms of his end product, I'd say, and also his ability to beat a man. But in Ten Hag's system, on that right-hand side, he likes a left-footed player because what they can do is they're very strong in 1v1s and they're creative. And I think that's what's going to be interesting, is that when Antony comes in, and let's say even Gakpo, these are two players who are technically very good in tight spaces. They're able to beat a man. I think Marcus Rashford is best, like we saw against Liverpool, maybe in a bit more central. I actually think that's where you get the most out of him. It's difficult. Is he a traditional striker? No. But I don't think that he can beat a man as well as he used to anymore. That's just my opinion. I don't think he's tricky. But I think if you get him exposing space in behind or running in the half space like he did, and I mean, he destroyed Trent. It's not the first time he's done this, Rob. Remember under Jose Mourinho, where we beat Liverpool 2-1 and he destroyed Trent again. Very similar. I know Jose went long, played off Lukaku, but we exploited Trent the same way. And it's not rocket science to do that. But I just think with Marcus Rashford, if you're asking him to be comfortable in tight spaces, quick 1-2s, I don't think that's that plays to his strengths. He has a place in the squad, but I feel like ultimately United need more options as well, because you've got to rotate, and whoever you're playing, they need to change up a little bit.
Of course you do. And I think one of the things that's definitely understood at Manchester United is they have too many players with similar profiles. That's a problem. So you need to be able to diversify. So you called Marcus tricky there, or not tricky, I mean. I don't think it matters. What matters is pace. Pace kills. Yeah, if you've got pace, you can find a way. That's what it is. That's how you break the line, because you're quick. I don't want Marcus Rashford running at players with the ball at his feet, because I don't really want anyone doing that, because it doesn't normally work. But it does mean that on the other side, if you have someone like Antony, and fingers crossed that deal gets done, Antony can bring the ball inside and allow Rashford to make that run around a defender to stay onside through the middle. So this is where what you would call maybe a year or two ago a strikerless system, you can do that, you can play that way, because your wide players and your number 10 are like strikers in a way. So this is why Martial becomes really, really important. So a lot of people slating Martial before the game, going, oh, he's not as good as Ronaldo. Well, yeah, he's never going to be as good as Ronaldo, but that's not what any of this is about. It's about
right now, he's a better player than Ronaldo. Ronaldo's 37 years old.
I've absolutely hammered Anthony Martial for year after year after year for his failures. Yeah, and I would pick Anthony Martial ahead of Ronaldo. That's just the truth. So, and I would do it for the right reasons. I'm not doing it for ego, or I'm not doing it for, like, you know, a kind of popularity contest. This goal here shows why you play Anthony Martial, is because he can, the ball can stick to his foot and he can tempt defenders to step out and make mistakes. Now, most number nines can't do that. Cristiano can't do that. Cristiano probably here would have had his back to goal and would have been looking to play Bruno in on the side, which would have been an okay ball, but you wouldn't have been able to get him behind then. You'd have been, the defense would have reset itself. So this is why Martial becomes important. But hey, Haider, go and buy another striker that helps you do that as well. Do you know what I mean? Go and find someone that can play the nine, give you options, because United haven't really got that at the moment. If you move Ronaldo out, you will probably have to go and buy a nine, but this year you might be stuck, say, Rashford playing the nine and running that central channel. And you know what? I think he'll be quite happy doing that. He'd be all right with that, because he's fast and he can run players and he's confident in those situations. And then you allow the trickery to be done by the likes of Sancho and Antony. They become your creators to link up with Bruno and Eriksen, and Marcus can be more about straight line speed.
Yeah, and that answers a question here saying, so does that mean if Antony plays, then Sancho has to sit on the bench? Nope. Move Sancho to the left.
Nope. Yeah.
And you put Rashford on the bench, or you rotate him with Martial, and Antony's on the right. And that's how United has to be.
I'm just reading something here. False analysis. Martial's still not good enough. Look, I'm telling you, right? If you're playing FIFA, I keep saying this, and he's like 63% rather than 68%. I get it. He's not good enough. But this is not about any of that stuff. It's about making
systems,
stuff gel.
Systems. That's it. That's all I'm going to say.
Man United fans, and I'll just repeat this last thing as well. Man United fans would have said to you 6 years ago, a front line of Firmino, Salah and Mane is not good enough for Man United. They would have said that, right? And that front line has dominated world football and dominated the Premier League. And they came from Southampton, Roma and Hoffenheim. So it's not about those things. And Martial, I think this is where you give players opportunity, don't you, Haydar? You say to Martial, do you know what? Yeah, we are going to go and buy another striker. I'm not going to not buy a striker because of you, but you got to prove yourself. So when you're in the team, show me you can do it. And I think in that 45 minutes, he did everything that he needed to do. You know, the manager would have looked at that and gone, that's what I saw in pre-season. And that's what I missed the first two games. I desperately need this player to start. Being good enough is subjective. What's not subjective, what's the opposite, is results. So if you win games with Anthony Martial as your number nine, keep doing it. Don't move away from it and go and buy players that you can then complement your system for.
Absolutely. Let's move on, Rob. Now, let's preview Saints. So we've got Southampton on the weekend. Mm-hmm. And look, United, we've said it already, but they need to play with the same intensities, play mm-hmm. with the same aggression. They should almost act as if they're playing Liverpool again. That's important. And this is about mentality, Rob. More than anything else, it's about mentality. What we have here up on the screen, and this is from Who Scored. This is the probable lineups. And so we'll start with Man United here. So, Rob, they've gone for 4-3-3. And largely the same side, to be honest. But the only change really is Martial up top. So that's actually what I would go for as well. I probably wouldn't start Casemiro. Not because I think McTominay is better, but I just don't think... Like you said earlier on in the show, I'm probably the least biggest McTominay fan, to be honest with you. But ultimately, at the end of the day, don't change the winning side. So will Casemiro come in weeks to come? Of course he will. And he is a world-class player. He's probably the best defensive midfielder in the world currently. And I can't wait to see him play. Also with a couple of other additions. But if we're going into this game, I think we go with the same. And remember as well, like we've been saying, Saints work seriously hard. It could be the wrong game to maybe bring Casemiro in. He's coming to a new league. Not to say he's not good enough. This isn't Real Madrid. This is still a unsettled Manchester United side. Maybe it's not the right game to bring Casemiro on. Maybe a game where a team doesn't press you as aggressively, doesn't play as with as much intensity, doesn't make you run around as much. Maybe it's better to not play him in this.
Yeah, I think I don't want to sound like I'm being contrary all the time, so I apologize, Haydar. But the Southampton team are going to make you run around. This is what they do, you know. So this 4-2-3-1 that they set up with here is not really 4-2-3-1. What is it? It's 4-2-2-2. Where have we seen that before? Yeah, Ralph Rangnick. So this is the Red Bull system, and Hasenhüttl was part of that from the Red Bull Academy. They will set up in this 4-2-3-1 in terms of visually, but they'll go and do their work in that 4-2-2-2 where they will press. And press and press. They don't sit. They are nasty. They have the highest work rate of any team in the Premier League. Yeah, and they have done. They do it all the time. What I would just say about the Casemiro point, we talked about this off air, didn't we? Is that with Casemiro, I saw in the comments there, someone said, does he fit the manager's plans? Well, if the manager's plans is 4-3-3, Casemiro fits it. Because that's what Real Madrid do. It's what Casemiro's always played. 4-3-3 is absolutely his formation. And when you look at the 4-3-3 United have got set up here, so this is kind of using the Liverpool game as the template, would I start McTominay and Casemiro? Well, it would only depend on what I see in training. So if I see Casemiro comes in and completely bosses training for 7 days or something before the game, I'm not saying, Scotty, sorry, you're not playing. You know, I might say, right, okay, let's give Casemiro a go, maybe give him an hour and then bring him McTominay or something like that. The other side of this is that you just said there about teams affecting United and United's shape. Casemiro plays for Real Madrid. And what Real Madrid have to do in La Liga every week is play teams that try and affect their shape. So Casemiro is down with this. He's used to playing 15 clubs a week or 15 clubs a year, twice a year, home and away, of teams that try and spoil. So that's great. I actually want Casemiro for that reason, because then you can start to play progressive football. Casemiro is a decent pass for the ball. Again, last 2-3 days, pundits have been coming out going, can he pass the ball? Just go read his metrics.
It shows
read his metrics. They're all there for you to read. You know, Google it, you know, Casemiro. passing stats, and you'll see that Casemiro can pass a football. He's a Brazilian. You know, he's not Fred in terms of like the energy rate, but he is someone that will be a calming presence in there. He will look at that 4-3-3 and he will be saying, my job is to form a relationship with Martinez and Varane, and then my job is to get the ball to Fernandes or Eriksen either side of me. That's my job. And that's all I do the whole game. Now, that keeps things simple. Doesn't mean he's an out-and-out defensive midfielder, but it means that he's the modern six. That's what we call modern six. So this is, I think, where we go. Like in terms of the Southampton game, the manager might go, do you know what? I need, actually, more leadership in there. And Scotty's a bit hot and cold. So, Scotty, you're going to come on and do the energy bit for me at the end of the game, a bit like Fred did against Liverpool. It was interesting, wasn't it? The substitutes that he made, I thought the substitutes were relatively poor. They didn't really do it. They only came on for a small period. But Fred came on, gave the ball away a load. And it's a bit like, ugh. Ronaldo came on, didn't run. It's like, ugh. So it's kind of like you need players that come on and actually duplicate what you're doing and doing it maybe better with a bit more energy. I think Casemiro is perfect for this system. He might start, he might not, but it all depends on training. But he's had a full preseason. You know, he's trained for Real Madrid the whole of preseason. And I've seen some minutes of his during preseason and early part here. And obviously he's out of Real Madrid's plans anyway, but he looks fit. Yeah, he looks ready. So I don't think it'll be too much of an issue if Ten Hag gives him the once over and says, no, do you know what? I'm going to give you an hour against Southampton. I think Southampton will look at him and go, yeah, he's quite a good player, that player. We might have to do something slightly different to get the ball off him.
Good comment here, Rob, saying Ten Hag has tweeted slightly. He wants a ball-playing midfielder in this team and he's going ahead with Bruno. So that's why Eriksen's nailed on start with Casemiro. It makes sense. And that's why I keep on banging on about this, but that's why Frankie de Jong with Casemiro makes sense when you think about the profiles that Ten Hag's going for. I honestly think this, Rob, that Ten Hag saw the two defeats, to Brighton, especially to Brentford, and thought, okay, I need a number six. He's gone out and got the best number six in world football right now. And when you think about him in front of Varane and Martinez, he's played a Varane for many, many years. There's a chemistry there. I think that's quite exciting. You're thinking, right, because that's what every centre-back pairing or every defence still needs someone to cover for them. And United haven't had that for years. McFred haven't done the job. We know with Ollie's system, you know, with his double pivot, it was very rigid. They weren't great in terms of their awareness of spacing. So I think that Ten Hag actually has, in some ways, tweaked what he initially thought. He probably thought De Jong would play in that sixth position. We spoke about that, didn't we? But I actually think that Casemiro coming in is a very, very smart signing. And we are going to talk about Casemiro's statistics here in the last segment of the show. We're going to compare him to Scott McTominay. We all know Casemiro is levels above Scott McTominay. I'm not even going to try and say anything otherwise. We know that. Scott McTominay, for me, I would probably take, if an offer of 30 million came in, I'd take it. That's just me personally. But, he looks
like... What if Casemiro breaks his leg after the second game?
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen.
That's why you don't take the 30 million. Like, this is the problem. I think the thing is with building a squad is that we're all very much like, I don't like that player, so I like this player, but this player is better. Casemiro is brilliant, but you're going to need numbers. And this is, I think, what the manager's been preaching. And this is why I would never sell Scott McTominay at this moment of time. He is literally not the worst problem player at Man United. He's actually a starter if something goes wrong. So I think the balance there is that Scott, there is no market for Scott McTominay. Man United are not shopping him. No one has come in for him. I think you sit with him at the moment. You don't want to play McFred. I get that. You don't want that combination because it doesn't work, doesn't help you. But I think you definitely need cover because Casemiro might get an injury and then you're going, got to play Charlie Savage. Got no choice because I've just sold Scott McTominay for 30 million and he's banging it in at Brentford or Fulham or somewhere. And you're like, oh, we could have done with him. So I think you've got to be careful with the outgoings. Definitely get rid of players 100%. I'm with you on that. But be careful who you get rid of.
We'll have to agree to disagree as we've done on this show, but that's fine. That's all right. Let's have a look at some of the key metrics here, Rob. So passes attempted. Casemiro is very, very high, 88th percentile. We know that Real Madrid dominate possession. He can pass the ball. And this nonsense that people have been saying, I'm not going to say what radio station it's on. We all know which one it is. Just spouting absolute rubbish day in, day out about Man United. They get their clicks. But you can see compared to McTominay's 41st percentile for McTominay. So Casemiro, we all know that he's very good on the ball. Pass completion is pretty good as well, 76th percentile. McTominay's not too far behind, 68th percentile as well. in terms of carries, Casemiro isn't going to be one of those that's going to pick up the ball and carry it and be progressive in that respect. We know McTominay actually thrives on that, which is why I don't think McTominay's a six. He's more comfortable as one of the eights. And we might actually see that him paired. You know, he is good at picking up the ball and carrying it to making some third man runs. But the real key metrics on why Man United, what did Ten Hag said? He said he's the cement in between the bricks. What a lovely analogy. I really like that. And when you have a look at it, you know, in terms of pressures, not that high, but tackles, he's up there the best of Europe. Interceptions, blocks, clearances, aerial duels won as well. That's an important one as well. If you've got Martinez behind, supposedly, we've seen that's not the case with the statistics and the metrics, but supposedly, maybe shrugs on the high ball. There are going to be teams that are going to be launching it at Martinez if you've got Casemiro there. It's a really smart signing, in my opinion. Maybe the numbers don't match up, but I really do like the signing of Casemiro, and I'm excited to see him play.
Yeah, look, I don't think Casemiro is going to play as a defensive midfielder. So what do I mean by that? So there's a big kind of philosophical debate behind about what a modern six is. What does a modern number six do? Now, Casemiro, to people, is the de facto best defensive midfielder in the world. But if he was just to do that defensive function and do nothing else, I don't think it really helps this Man United team not to move the ball, because that's what this is about. So let's just kind of, the reason why I kind of pulled up both these two players' wider stats is to just give our viewers and the audience some balance as to why you're buying Casemiro, why you want Casemiro in there rather than Scott McTominay. Because Scott McTominay, we know, isn't a number six. We know that. It's just obvious. So passes attempted, 88th percentile there for Casemiro. So almost in the top 10%. Pass attempted, Scott McTominay, who is expected in a double pivot to pass the ball, 41st percentile. So that's not great for starters for Scotty. But pass completed, 76 percentile for Casemiro, 68 for Scotty. And the issue here is how you play. Casemiro's job at Real Madrid is to pass the ball to Toni Kroos or to Luka Modric. That 5-10-yard ball, that's it. That's what I want. I want my number six doing that, just to be clean and tidy, get the ball moving. And that's what Scott McTominay and Fred can't do, because they're too messy. They're too rushed on the ball. So that's why those stats there that we kind of brought them up, that's why that matters. Go down the list. So now we're looking at kind of the more defensive function. So Casemiro, defensive midfielder, plays at times Real Madrid, 90th percentile for tackles. That's good. So he can face up to people. Scott McTominay, who is a tough guy, you know, likes to be in the tackle, only 59th percentile. So sometimes that shows it's a little bit of smoke and mirrors. Blocks, this is a really important one, the blocks metric. Casemiro, 93rd percentile. Scotty, 51st percentile. So can you see now, as like, if you're Erik ten Hag, you don't know these players, you're just looking at metrics and you're kind of going, I need the guy on the left. I need that Casemiro bloke, because he's going to give me these things. Interceptions, they're far superior. Clearances, Casemiro, 97th percentile. It's like elite, top in the world. Aerial duels won, 96th percentile. Now, Scotty's no shrinking violet at 91 and 90. But if you're the manager, that's why you're buying Casemiro. There's been a lot said today, and it's a lie, that Casemiro's been bought as a De Jong replacement. He's not been bought as a De Jong replacement. They're like two different machines. Like, it's again, it's like trying to buy a Ferrari and saying it's exactly the same as the Maserati.
Let's address some of what you've been told about some of Man United's transfers coming over, because obviously there's going to be a lot of reports coming out. You're going to hear this is off, this is on. De Jong has been on off all summer, we know that.
Yeah,
I still think it's going to happen, okay, and I've got confidence. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. United will still go and get another player, but I think that United wouldn't have chased him all summer. And they would have bought someone else in if they didn't think that they could get Frankie De Jong. They'd be looking at other targets now. So talk to the listeners about what's going on in terms of United's transfer activity, because there is a lot going on behind the scenes.
Well, they are looking at other targets. So that's the truth. There is that truth there. What's not true is that Man United are not prepared to buy Frankie De Jong. It's just not true. It's Frankie De Jong's representatives were in London yesterday and the day before. They were here to see Ali Dersen, who's the actual agent, was here to see Malacia make his debut at Manchester United. They're the same agent. And Manchester United have steadfast in their position and always have been. And that is that if the player comes onto the market, they will fight tooth and nail to get him. So this choice now comes down to Barcelona, because Barcelona are shuffling their pack. They're going to get rid of Aubameyang, probably get 15, 20 million off Chelsea for him. They'll be happy with that. That 20 million will help
Memphis
them.
As well.
Well, they're going to get Memphis off the books. So Memphis is someone, again, Man United.
I'd take him, Rob.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if he makes you better. Like, I think every signing has to make you better now, Haydar. And I think there is going to be a case of where you must pad your squad out as well. So, you know, if you lose Ronaldo, you're looking just for someone who can do the nine function. And there's no doubt that Memphis is better suited to this 4-3-3 of Ten Hag's than Ronaldo is. Ronaldo's better as a player, whatever. I don't want people to get upset about it, but Memphis to suit it. But would I take Memphis as an £8 million cast off, or even as a, you know, if I got my free transfer, maybe. Does he help me win Premier League matches? I don't know. You know, he's been let go for a reason, isn't he? So I don't want to take players. I'd rather pay more money and get better players. That's the way I look at it always. So I think with Frankie de Jong, the situation is exactly the same. That Barcelona hold the cards. And what Man United have done today with the way that they've put it out in the press is they're basically showing Barcelona and the Catalonia press that this is not a game they're willing to play. It's up to you now. We are ready. And if you're not ready to sell, then we won't buy him. Goodbye. You know, we've got other targets. I do think that Man United will bring in an extra midfielder. I'm not going to talk names and stuff at the moment. I don't think it's the right time. But I do think that with this kind of last week, I said on my other show that I think United will make a shock signing. And what I meant by that is that Man United know that positionally, they still need to get those things done. Everyone knows that Anthony wants to come to Man United. Everyone knows that Gakpo probably will come to Man United and that PSV are quite resigned to losing the players. So that's two of your lists that you've got. You know, you've already got Martinez. You've just brought Casemiro in. You can't fix everything in this window, but you still need a central midfielder.
Yeah.
A keeper might come in, but these things are only being talked about on the surface, Haydar. Like, again, as fans get excited by these things because they see something wrong in a team. David De Gea made one or two mistakes, so that's it. We get rid of him. We'll buy a new goalkeeper. Again, that whole football manager world does not work in the real world. If there's a goalkeeper that suits and costs and budgeted, they'll go buy them. But I think they're more likely looking for a backup for De Gea this year. And then De Gea's contract will expire. That will give you that big wage back, £360,000 a week. You could go get a really good goalkeeper for that. But you can't do it all at once. I do think with Frankie de Jong that if Barcelona sell him, he's got three options now. Bayern Munich are now the new third option for him. And that's an attractive option, isn't it? I think if you've got to choose between United, Chelsea and Bayern Munich, who are you choosing? Probably Bayern Munich. So that's something for Frankie de Jong that he will now be thinking about and saying, right, well, if I leave this football club, where do I go? So that's why I'm not as sure as you, saying I think it will definitely come to Man United. I don't think Man United could do any more to make Frankie de Jong come to Man United. This is now about Barcelona and the player deciding where it goes next. But you're running out of time. The clock is ticking. And you still need a midfielder. So if you don't get Frankie de Jong, you've got to go and get someone. You know, Tielemans will be on the market, no doubt, in the final week. Do you put your money towards someone like him whose stock is falling, whereas a year ago his stock was rocketing, wasn't it? Neves, it might well be available
He was fantastic against Spurs. Game.
Now Wolves are doing their business. Did you remember I said about 6 weeks ago, Neves came off the market because Wolves were not getting their transfers done. Now Wolves have started to get their transfers done. So there's that chance that Neves will be on the market. But does Neves fit this 4-3-3? Probably not. So that's a thing for Ten Hag to decide, isn't it? So Ten Hag has to go, do I want that system? If I pay a double pivot, will Neves fit there with someone that can play there with, like, say, with Casemiro? Now, that works. But if he's going to play 4-3-3, probably doesn't buy Neves. So all of these things are for the manager to decide. I'm sure he's already decided it, Haydar, but we just have to see where the coin falls. This is where it is now. It's still Frankie de Jong number one and then everyone else. But Frankie de Jong has got options and maybe Man United isn't his best option.
All right, we're going to wrap it up there. Guys, thank you so much for all your fantastic comments, your interactions as well. And make sure you hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. Rob, we aren't doing an FPL show this week and a Twitter space unfortunately, we're both away. But have you got anything to add before we wrap up?
Well, this was your Twitter space. This was your preview. So this is what we would have done. So you've got that all in one big masterclass. But no, look, I think that the United fans, as I said at the start of the show, enjoy the Liverpool victory. Remember it. It was a great night. Fantastic for United fans to get one over on Liverpool, even if it's just a short-term thing. But more than that, more importantly, it's about now just going in the right direction, match to match to match. That's all that matters. You know, going and reproducing that form that they showed at Old Trafford and doing it on the South Coast at Southampton is all that matters. Nothing else matters. It's up to the manager to find a way that at the end of Southampton, he's not going, right, lads, we've got to run another 15K on Monday because you lot didn't run it this one. I don't want that. You know, it worked once. It doesn't necessarily work again. I think United are getting together a squad that can compete. And I like the Casemiro addition, even though I do think the deal is absolutely like mind-blowing. 160 million for a 30-year-old. I don't know if it's ever been done except for Cristiano. It's the only other player in world football. So they've certainly put their, you know, stuck their flag in the mast there and saying, yeah, we're going to go with it. So let's hope Casemiro stays fit and can do it. He's a really, really good central midfielder. But you've got to keep adding. You know, and if you don't get De Jong, you've still got to keep adding. And I think that's the way this project's going to go.
Absolutely. Guys, make sure you give us a follow on at MayUnitedMC. Give myself a follow on at Hader_Albani. And give Rob a follow on at @Rob_B. Enjoy the rest of the week. Enjoy United on the weekend. And we'll see you all next time.